So I've been talking a lot about RHC lately, so I said, okay, let's talk about dark matter. Now, our knowledge of the macroscopic world is quite different than the knowledge we have of the microscopic world, while we know the microscopic, you know, universe very, very well in a lot of details. Somehow we only have a very coarse-grained description of the macroscopic world. For instance, we know that the energy density of our universe is shared approximately between these three components: dark energy, around 70%, us, baryons, stuff that interact with light, not necessarily baryons, 5%. And then there is dark matter. And I would say among these three components, the one we understand the least is dark matter, assuming the usual theoretical priors about dark energy being a cosmological constant. Now, what do we know about dark matter? We know that if it's a particle, if it's a new fundamental particle, let's say, we know that it has to be cosmologically stable, has to be electrically neutral, ooh, very good approximation, and it has to be non-relativistic when galaxies were formed. We know this from the measurement of the galaxy power spectrum, matter power spectrum. And if you want some reference number, if you take a box of 10 centimeter length, then if dark matter is a particle of 100 GeV, you will have, on average, three dark matter particles in that box moving around us, moving at a speed of 200 kilometers per second on average. Okay? This is pretty much what we know, modulo some extra small information. We know about dark matter. The problem is that apparently it's very weakly coupled to us, and from all we know comes from gravitational probes of its nature. In particular, we don't know the mass, if it's a new particle, and our uncertainty is not small. You know, without projecting down all the other variables and just looking at the mass, there are 50 order of magnitude of possibilities for the mass of the dark matter, going down to 10 to the minus 22 electron volt in the case of a boson, up to, you know, let's say the Planck scale, but which doesn't really make sense to talk about particles anymore. So it's clearly, you know, some degree of theoretical priors is needed in order to give any, to obtain any information about dark matter. And you can rank these priors in terms of ambitions that you have about your description of the world. So very ambitious would be to have dark matter being part of the already known standard model of particle physics. For instance, it could be made of primordial black holes. It could be some strange state of matter, for instance, a six quark bound state that for some reason ends up in the right mass range, not to decay, etc. It could be right-handed neutrinos, I believe. You know.
Can I ask you something about this?
Yeah.
So if it's this six quark bound state, it has strong interaction, cross-section,
yeah,
with us, and it's okay.
I believe it's actually, let me, so I believe it's actually excluded by measurement of the CMB. So there is a very quite recent paper of Cora Dvorkin about constraining interactions of dark matter with baryons. And this is like, you know, if you don't believe in any fine-tuning of its cross-section with baryons, it should be excluded by roughly one order of magnitude. I can tell you.
Do people have a formation mechanism for this thing?
No. No. Yeah.
You come from Blenny slants.
No, that's why I put it there. That's why I put it there. I had to do it.
No, you have. But she's done enough good things. She deserves.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so at some point during this talk, I'll tell you another story about Glennis because it's kind of related to all this talk. Then, you know, maybe it's not known physics, but it can be related to solution to other problems. And the WIMP is an example, the standard WIMP. QCD axion is another outstanding candidate as a solution to the strong CP problem. And then, whoops, oh, there was supposed to be another slide. Oh, okay, so, no, sorry. And but the thing is that, you know, if you, you know, the more ambitious you are, the bigger the experimental constraints are. And so here I want to show you what's at what point we are in probing the WIMP idea through direct detection experiments. You know, if you look in the last 10 years, you moved down by probably 4 to 5 order of magnitude in this plane in terms of cross section, and you know. We are at the level that we are probably we are going to hit this neutrino background floor, which we become sensitive to the scattering of solar neutrino, for instance, with nuclei. And you know, the point is that there are very well motivated candidates down here. I'm thinking about thermal Xeno, and I'm thinking about you know, thermal Wino appearing in very theoretically, very well motivated scenarios solving the hierarchy problem or giving approximate solution to the hierarchy problem. Thing is that, you know, you are covering all these masses above 10 GeV. There are progresses in going below these masses, like with super CDMS, going between, you know, 10 GeV, 1 GeV, and 100 MeV. There are also other experiments that will allow to probe the interaction of the dark matter with the lighter dark matter particles scattering on electrons. And you know, one of the outstanding ideas is Sensei. So you know, this parameter space is being probed. And you know, you wait long enough, you will see a lot of progress.
So what are the two different plots?
So these are, these should be, I believe, two different theoretical model on how, you know, on the form,
form
factor, yeah. But yeah, this is more to show the mass range that this experiment may end up probing. Clearly, it's difficult with the nuclei, with electrons, which are lighter. You can go down to these masses. Okay, finally, you know, the constraints on the axions are slower to come, but you know very well, being from perimeter, there are a lot of ideas, and you know, progress will be made there too. Finally, and my talk is gonna sit exactly here, we can. There may be other possibilities with the idea that at least they don't cause any more problems, and you know. There has been a lot of investigation about dark sectors, and my talk will move in this realm. So let me start. The outline of my talk is the following. I will review the generic prediction of thermal dark matter. Then I will present the three classical exceptions to the statement that the relic abundance of dark matter is inversely proportional to its annihilation cross section. And I'll present a fourth exception. Now, historically, you know, these three classical exceptions are classical, if you know the paper I'm referring about, is a famous paper of Grist and Secco. But so this is what of an historical presentation of the problem. So one possible theoretical prior that you can have is assuming that dark matter in the early universe was in thermal equilibrium with the standard model plasma. This is a very appealing prior because thermal effects erase initial condition to good accuracy. So it's very, you know, so it's a good prior. And also, it requires some degree of non-gravitational interactions between dark matter and the standard model, which maybe will lead to some experimental signature. So now, a standard WIMP, weakly interacting massive particle, works the following way. At temperature above the mass, the interactions keep dark matter in equilibrium with the standard model plasma. In particular, there's no if there are no conserved quantum number, the chemical potential of the dark matter particle is gonna be zero, and the abundance of the dark matter, measured in terms of the entropy of the universe, will follow a Boltzmann distribution. And by this I mean you are insensitive to initial condition because Boltzmann distribution is universal. At some point, as the universe expands and the number density of dark matter particle becomes exponentially diluted, it will become harder and harder to satisfy this equilibrium, this approximate equilibrium condition, so that interactions which change the number of axes of the dark matter here will fall below Hubble expansion, and the number density and the comoving number density of dark matter will freeze out. This happens at the value of the temperature of order the mass, typically a factor of 10 below the mass of the particle, with only a very small sensitivity on the parameters of the model, which are the mass of the dark matter and the interaction cross-section. What's crucial, though, is that it is true that this temperature is very weakly dependent on the parameters, but this distribution is exponential. So in the end, what happens is that the Rayleigh abundance at the end will be inversely proportional to the scattering cross section. In particular, and here that's something that inspired a lot of model building ideas, if you put the number in your calculation, you find out that if you have a mass of order the weak scale and a coupling of order a weak coupling, just because the weak scale is the average of equilibrium temperature and Planck mass, you get the right Rayleigh abundance. So this is called the Wimp miracle, and it says that a particle which has weak scale mass and weak couplings have the right Rayleigh abundance. Okay, maybe it's a numerology, maybe it's a hint of something deeper, But the crucial point is that it predicts something that, if dark matter has weak interactions, or maybe these weak interactions are with the standard model, and then maybe you can measure something. So let me introduce this plot just to tell you to situate the WIMP in a more generic framework. Let me very, very schematically draw this plot. Mass and coupling. This coupling will be the coupling of dark matter with the standard model. See, I'm introducing a single coupling. Sometimes I will have to tell you what exactly this coupling is, but let's think about this plot, okay? Okay, this way. So the WIMP, let me tell you that you don't want to live up here, because up here you're strongly coupled. You don't want to live down here, because as I said, we have probes that tells us that dark matter cannot be relativistic at the times of galaxy formation, and this would happen if dark matter is thermal and below with a mass below 2 keV. Finally, in this corner, this coupling also describes self-interaction. You will have two large self-interaction, which are constrained by Ballet cluster and many other galaxy mergers that we have observed. Okay, so where is the WIMP here? The WIMP is on this point, is some kind of blob here in which the mass scale is of order TV and the coupling is of order alpha electromagnetic. So this whole plane, the WIMP, is some more or less a point. So what about all the rest? Are there no models for thermal dark matter? Well, there are. For instance, it's enough to assume that somehow dark matter is more weakly interacting than we expect. For instance, we can imagine that there is the standard model. So the WIMP assumes that the dark matter have some kind of order one interaction with the standard model. But what you can assume is that there is another sector to which dark matter interacts, maybe with order one coupling. But then the coupling of this sector to the standard model is much weaker than a typical weak scale coupling. It's called dark sector. And this allows already to obtain a whole other class of models in which the formula I gave you before that relates Rayleigh abundance and cross-section still holds. But notice that what I'm fixing is the cross-section. But the cross-section is typically equal to a coupling over a mass scale. So I can just make the coupling very small, alpha d, much smaller than alpha electromagnetic, if I make the dark matter lighter and lighter. Okay? So basically, I'm populating a line on this plane where this relation holds. Okay? Now you see that, you know, what I'm doing, I'm moving away from this WIMP locus, and I'm going down here at smaller masses and smaller coupling. Typically, you know, doing these have some cost, because if I fix the cross-section and I go to lower mass, other bounds become important, for instance, the one coming from CMB, and I have to work my way out of these bounds. For instance, I cannot assume that dark matter interacts or annihilates through S-wave channel. There has to be some suppression, velocity suppression. And this comes because there are other bounds, apart from direct detection, which depends, on much more steeply on the dark matter number density, in particular CMB constraint or indirect detection constraint. Now, but let's go, you know, nothing changed moving along that line. It's still a WIMP. I'm just making use of the fact that the mass for a thermal relic is proportional to the coupling. So can I, what are the assumptions for this calculation to hold? Well, the assumption, and I want to write down the assumption so that if then I give you an exception, it's an exception to this assumption. So we are assuming that dark matter is stabilized by Z2 symmetry. We are assuming that the chemical potential of dark matter is set to zero by 2-2 annihilation. There are examples in which dark matter has a non-vanishing chemical potential, for instance, asymmetric dark matter, or mu equals zero is not coming from 2-2 annihilation, but, you know, 3-2 annihilation. And there are examples, SIMP, ELDER, other things. I'm assuming that dark matter and the standard model are in thermal equilibrium. So, you know, apart from variation of number of degrees of freedom, these relations hold. The temperature of the dark matter and the temperature of the standard model are the same. Finally, I'm assuming a conventional thermal history for the universe. Okay? Very good. So if I make these three assumptions, there are three known exceptions to rho equal 1/σ. And they were, you know, discovered in this paper in 91. Okay, there is one which is a little trivial, which is obtained when the dark matter sits on some resonance. This implies that there is a resonant enhancement of the cross-section, and basically I lose the power of the coupling. There is one less trivial assumption, which was revisited recently, which is the case in which dark matter annihilates to heavier states. If this happens, then chi-chi to phi-phi, phi are the states to which dark matter annihilates, doesn't go through at zero temperature. It exists only because of thermal effects, which implies that I can allow this coupling sitting here to be much bigger than for a given mass to the usual WIMP case without having any problem, because I will have a Boltzmann suppression at high temperature. And so this allows to populate this region above this line, where the coupling is big and the mass is small, still I get the right relic abundance. And notice that this is particularly interesting, because now I can go to small mass, where in principle a WIMP would be killed by CMB constraint, and you know, nothing happens, because at the time at which CMB constraint become important, annihilation are exponentially suppressed. Okay, so it's like taking the usual P wave suppression and make it P instead of L equal one suppression, you have L equal to infinity. It's an exponential suppression at that point. Okay, now. The third exception is co-annihilation. Now, very schematically, co-annihilation, I'll describe it better later, but very schematically, what happens is that dark matter is naively very weakly coupled, but there are exchange interaction between dark matter and some other state which instead are more strongly interacting, and this exchange interaction being active allows dark matter to be depleted efficiently. And so this populates this region down here. where you have a very weakly interacting dark matter particle, still you are able to get the right Rayleigh abundance due to these, again, thermal effects. So a fourth exception comes out just by looking at the co-annihilation regime. So crucial condition for the co-annihilation calculation to hold is that at the time of freeze-out, all dark matter particles share the same chemical potential. That is, there are these exchange reactions that are active at the freeze-out of chi-chi annihilation. Co-scattering is the fourth exception. It's the case in which this doesn't hold. So the exchange interaction freeze out before the annihilation. Okay. Now, in order to, this is a general framework, but I want to show you an example where this can be realized, and it can be realized in a very simple model. You don't need a strange construction. Take two Weyl fermions, okay, and the real scalar. Okay. Now, the dark matter will be chi for me, will be the lighter fermion. Then the dark matter will have a friend psi, and the friend psi can talk with the scalar field phi with some coupling of order one. Finally, phi will interact with the standard model in order to maintain thermal equilibrium. But the point is that chi is very weakly coupled to the rest of this sector. Okay? There is only a small mass mixing between chi and psi. Now, as I said, this epsilon, this mixing of phi with the standard model is required to ensure thermal equilibrium. The spectrum we'll assume is of the following kind. The masses are more or less of the same order. There is a splitting of order one between all the states. Chi is the lighter fermion, and so it's going to be dark matter by a remnant of some Z2 squared symmetry here. And there is phi, which is a scalar. Above chi, there is this dark matter friend psi, which will be fundamental. So again, psi is active, it's coupling of order one, and chi is sterile. So this delta, which is this mass mixing over the mass of chi is very small. Okay. Now, the annihilation are described by assuming thermal equilibrium. The annihilation are described by Boltzmann equation describing the number density of chi and psi. And just the only important thing is that there are two terms. One, which describe the exchange between chi and psi. So all those reactions that convert a chi into a psi. Okay, these exchange terms. And another term is this one, the annihilation terms. So the first term keeps the total number of conserved fermion number, basically. The second one, instead, lead to annihilation of chi and psi, two scalars, and in the end, to the standard model. Okay. Now, this system realizes co-annihilation. There is a regime in which this model behaves in a co-annihilating way. What is this regime? Well, let's assume that the exchange reactions are efficient. So these are the exchange reactions. Chi scatter on a phi, which turns into a psi and another phi. So if these reactions are in equilibrium, it means that the chemical potential of chi and the chemical potential of psi are the same. In particular, this thing hold here. Now, if this is true, then I can write a Boltzmann equation for the total number of fermions. N chi plus M psi, which will clearly be dominated by N chi since it's lighter than M psi, and so by Boltzmann suppression, N chi plus M psi is over N chi. And this is the equation. I'm using the fact that the chemical potential of chi and psi are equal, And so you see that I'm rewriting the Boltzmann equation for the evolution of the number density of chi in terms of an effective cross-section, okay, which is the sum, the weighted sum of these three processes by, you know, the appropriate power of ni over n equilibrium. So for instance, there is this one, then there is this one multiplied by the ratio of n, you see, you know, n psi over n chi equilibrium, and then there is this one. Now,
I have a question.
Yeah.
What symmetry for bits writing down in term phi chi psi?
Oh, no symmetry, but these, if you assume that delta m, well, if you assume that, if you want, it's a Z2 symmetry, it's an exchange symmetry.
So there's just purely on delta m.
Exactly. But if even, you know.
But there is no, once you write delta m, the symmetry is broken. Why don't
it's, but it's broken softly.
Yeah.
It's broken softly. So you will not generate that. You know, if you have.
Radiatively, it will be generated, but it's proportional to delta m.
Delta m, so there is no. How do you.
That doesn't change the.
How do you say? Yeah, first of all, you know, it doesn't have any. Yeah, it's proportional to delta m, and you don't generate logarithmically enhanced effect because it's a marginal operator, and delta m is. Delta m is. Relevant operator. So, okay. Now, if delta is big, all this discussion really doesn't matter. I'm a wimp because, you know, the contribution of this diagram and this diagram are exponentially suppressed by power of e to the minus delta m over t freeze out. So if delta is big enough, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm a wimp, and this is the effective cross-section. But the crucial point of quantum annihilation is that now assume that delta is small, okay? And so I have this opposite. Assume that now delta square is much smaller than e to the delta m over t freeze out, okay? Then the effective cross-section is not the one of the wimp anymore. It's actually dominated by this term here, okay? So what happens is that exchange reactions are efficient, and then what sets the number density of chi is actually the annihilation of psi. Okay, this is the usual co-annihilation story, okay? I have exchange reactions which are efficient down to whatever temperature, and when the psi-psi annihilation freezes out, this determines the final relic abundance, okay? Now, you can imagine the opposite situation in which, for some reason, this diagram freezes out before, stopped being efficient before. Now, you see that if this is no longer efficient, there are no other reactions changing the number of chi particles, okay? So when this stops, the number density of chi freezes out. And this is co-scattering, okay? How, you know, you can already imagine how you reach this regime. You simply take delta to be small enough. So at large delta, you have a wimp. As you lower delta, you enter into the co-annihilation regime. If you lower delta even more, you end up in the co-scattering regime, in which the final relic abundance is set no longer by annihilation, but by endothermic scattering reaction.
Sorry,
this is another parameter. This is the, so let me think a sec, what is the, I think it's just a phase of the.
Is this B phase?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So.
Does it change if you change the phase here?
So the thing is that actually I don't. Let me think 1 second because.
Because
I have to look exactly at what this theta is. I believe it's the phase between. So there are some reaction that if you take the phase to be zero become P wave and S wave. So this parameter really doesn't matter for this thing. I wanted to show you that the regime of co-scattering is reached as you lower delta. And in a sense, so co-scattering is the weakest possible. Thing that you can do, is the most weakly coupled realization of a thermal relic. Just send it to zero, send delta to be very small. Okay, so let me summarize 1 second how you get to the co-scattering regime. So psi psi annihilation are efficient. All these annihilation channel can be neglected. So chi psi to phi phi and chi chi to phi phi can be neglected because they're all proportional to either higher powers of delta or have extra Boltzmann suppression because psi are Boltzmann suppressed with respect to chi. Finally, there is somewhat of a technical question. You don't want this inverse decay to be there. So you don't want psi to be able to decay to 2-body to chi and phi because otherwise this equilibrates everything again. And then you go back to the co-annihilating phase. So you have to impose some mass relation like this. So if this holds, the Boltzmann equation are simplified and they have this form. So they are simply the final relic density of chi is set by this endothermic process of upscattering to the heavier psi state. Okay, again, you can do some NDA and obtain some approximate formula for what's the final relic abundance. So the relic, the scattering cross section is Boltzmann suppressed, so because this reaction is endothermic, okay, and like this, and the final relic density scales is no longer proportional to 1/psi, 1/ the cross section, but it has some exponential dependence of the masses in the problem. Just to reiterate the thing, so here I wrote it right. So this is this interaction, this annihilation cross section that goes like 1/ delta to the fourth, and by dimensional analysis, this exchange cross section. Now what you basically notice if you just put in the various factors is that final relic abundance is much smaller than 1/ this annihilation cross section. To say again that you are living in a part of the plane, of this plane, which is down here. So you have a very small annihilation cross section, chi chi to phi phi. Still, still naively you would expect, okay, if I have a very small annihilation cross section, then my final relic density is way over abundant. But these thermal effects allow you to have the right relic density, live in this region here of the plane. Okay, again, it's plot. So you lower delta, you end up in that regime. So there are many things you can say about this model. You can see that you can interpolate from one phase to the other. You can go from WIMP to forbidden dark matter, co-annihilation. And as you lower delta, you end up in the co-scattering phase. This plot is, yeah?
Oh. No, sorry, I'm coughing.
Sorry. In this plot, you see that at every point, I'm fixing the delta m. So the delta m here is m psi minus m chi divided by m chi in order to reproduce the right relic abundance. And this delta m becomes smaller and smaller in this direction. But, again, this is just a specific implementation. Talking about Glennis again, so while we published this paper, therefore for some reason we found out that in the 90s Glennis was working on a model in which the Gluino is the is the lightest supersymmetric particle and is like 1 GV heavy. It was still possible, I guess, at this point. And she had a model in which the gluino and the beano were what here I'm calling chi and psi. She didn't call it co-scattering, but somehow she had a paper where the relic abundance of the beano was set by the this process, you know, these annihilation and these scattering processes. So she was basically doing co-scattering, and psi was a pion. So she wasn't calling it this way. The model was slightly different because decays were important, but, you know, Glennis comes back. Now, there is a...
Can I ask?
Yeah.
Is there a right-hand neutrino model you can write down with this?
You know, we are thinking about right now about like more motivated models, and I think it's probably possible. It depends what you call a right-handed neutrino. So you want to give masses to the neutrino.
Yeah, maybe there is a massless neutrino. So there is a guy that there are three sterile neutrinos basically, and there is one that doesn't couple to the Higgs, but it mixes with a heavy guy.
So chi would be that one.
Yeah,
you need another one. Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, we are thinking about right now writing more, because as I'm gonna tell you right now, this model here, the coupling is so weak that, for instance, it has no signal whatsoever in direct detection experiment. I'll tell you more about what experimental signature you get from here, but the point is that this is a mechanism which doesn't require any particularly contrived construction to happen. You know, it's just another phase of that phase diagram that I showed you before, that plot. So, you know, it's good to know that it is there. Now, one curiosity, if you want, again, which is related to this model, and it's one thing you should be worried about now that I told you all the story, is that, okay, you are saying that for the usual WIMP, what happens is that all the calculation that you do that leads you to say that the final relic abundance is 1/ the cross section rely on the fact that I have kinetic equilibrium. Okay? For a WIMP, this is straightforward to obtain because the annihilation are exponentially suppressed, while in principle the reaction that maintain kinetic equilibrium have no reason to be exponentially suppressed. Typically, actually, they decouple much later in time. And so at the time of freeze out, the temperature of the dark matter and the temperature of the standard model is the same. It's a good assumption to make to set them to be equal. Now, in this case, it's absolutely non-trivial, and it turns out it's actually not the case, because the reaction that maintains chemical equilibrium, kinetic equilibrium, has two powers of delta. Because remember, chi only talks with phi and the standard model by this mass mixing. And the reaction that instead lead to chemical equilibrium proportional only to delta. Okay. Furthermore, phi and chi have, phi is lighter, but you know, also phi is exponentially suppressed in its number density. So it's very possible and turns out to actually be the case in basically the whole parameter space, the kinetic equilibrium is lost at the same time as chemical equilibrium, because now this becomes negligible, okay, because it goes like delta to the four, this cross section. And now this reaction here, it will be responsible for both kinetic and chemical equilibrium, okay? So the calculation that I've done up to this point were wrong, okay? Actually, if you wanna know where this thing is relevant, simultaneous kinetic and chemical decoupling, it's relevant everywhere except in this corner up here. So, you know, this is a problem. Okay, so what can you do? I mean, it's so wrong. Well, if you do, you know, let's see let's see whether you can get some intuition of what's going on, okay? You can. So imagine that you have a chi particle coming in. So the chi particle wants to upscatter with a given momentum k, okay? Chi wants to upscatter to a particle psi, okay? Now, for a fixed momentum k, okay, what happens is there is a k minimum, a k min, that you have to get from phi in order, you know, to satisfy energy conservation, right? Now, the problem is that, so, the smaller your initial k for chi, and so you say, the smaller the initial k, the bigger k mean will be. Which, but now, phi is also a non-relativistic particle, so you know that large k's are exponentially suppressed for phi, okay? So this implies that, you know, the ability of low momentum k mod of chi to upscatter to psi, you know, will freeze out earlier for low momentum modes because they have to probe larger, you know, they have to probe the tail of the Boltzmann distribution of chi. Now, this is exactly the hallmark. So smaller momentum modes of chi need to meet phi momentum modes farther in the tail of its Boltzmann distribution, hence they couple earlier. And this is the hallmark of like losing kinetic equilibrium. Different momentum modes decouple at different times. Now, already from this picture, you understand that since lower momentum modes of chi decouple earlier, the abundance, this thermal effect will enhance the final abundance of chi because lower momentum modes decouple earlier, but lower momentum modes are more abundant. So in the end, they will freeze out earlier. And you will have the abundance of chi in the end will be enhanced with respect to the naive prediction I gave you before. And indeed, what's surprising, I'm showing you now how the calculation of the relic abundance changes when you include this thermal effect. So you see that this was the naive prediction. Now, this thing can change. Here it changes by one order of magnitude. The final abundance can change by two or three orders of magnitude if you do in certain region of parameter space. And here you see the effect on the phase space distribution of chi particle. This is the Boltzmann phase space distribution as a function of the comoving momentum in the usual freeze-out scenario. If you keep in thermal effects in, you see? There is more area under this curve, which means particle is more abundant, but the peak is also shifted at lower momentum, which means that you know the chi particle at the end are cooler than expected by standard freeze out. So the question is how, you know, and this again, you know, what happens? A naive prediction and the thick line is the right calculation. And the effect can be as big as order of magnitude in some regime. Now, what's non-trivial is that you're actually able to do this calculation. It's actually the only case I know where I can solve, basically analytically, the full Boltzmann equation. Let me tell you why, and then I won't bother you about this detail anymore because it's a technical detail, but it's somehow, you know, interesting that you can do it. The Boltzmann equation, you have to solve one Boltzmann equation for one process, which is the one describing this upscattering interaction. Okay. Now, the crucial thing that allows you to solve this process is that the particle chi, so what you want to solve, sorry, let me write it down, it's easier to do the formulas. So the reaction is this one, phi. Here?
No.
Here? Oh, okay. Let me. So, you have. So, chi, psi, phi, phi. Okay? Now, this is the only reaction that enters the Boltzmann equation. The crucial thing is that psi and phi are in thermal equilibrium. Their distribution is Boltzmann. So, your full phase space integral differential equation for the phase space distribution, it's linear on the phase space distribution function of chi. Okay. Now, this implies that you can turn this integral differential equation for the f of chi into a set of ordinary differential equations just by a change of variable. And you can solve this set of different. These are just ordinary differential equation with some boundary condition, which is thermal equilibrium at large enough temperature. So you can solve this analytically, basically, this integral differential equation, and it's actually the only the only case I know where I can do that. So cool, and you can study this thermal effect in details, and you can obtain a solution for the full phase space distribution of chi. Okay, and from here you get these plots I was showing you. So for instance, this plot here shows the ratio for a given comoving momentum q of the phase space distribution of that momentum mode q with respect to the thermal one. So as you see, as x grows, so as the temperature goes down, I start with 1, where everything is in kinetic equilibrium. As x grows, the actual ratio grows, okay? In particular, it grows at low q, as I said, because these are the modes that decouple earlier. And this leads to these effects here. Okay. Experimental signatures, let me tell you these in the last... clearly, this talk was more about discussing the mechanism. But I'm going to discuss experimental signature of the particular model I presented, which is one particular implementation of the mechanism. So clearly, the experimental signatures all arise from this coupling, which keeps the whole dark sector in thermal equilibrium with the standard model. It's the coupling between phi and some standard model operator. This coupling has to be small, clearly, because if it's not, otherwise chi just annihilates, it becomes a standard WIMP. So this coupling will be very small.
Sorry, when you calculate all these abundances, are you assuming that the standard model sector has the same temperature as the chi sector?
I'm
through the freeze out of the chi sector?
I can show that phi has the same temperature, no? And then by solving the Boltzmann equation, I'm actually not assuming that. I'm calculating the effects. So,
but do you need it to be? What would happen if, let's say...
Oh, completely decoupled.
Well, let's say that they were in equilibrium early on, and then because the freeze-out abundance of chi does not depend really on what happens in the standard model.
Yeah.
You can change what the ratio of temperature is
between
the standard model and that chi sector, and just change the dark matter. How crucial is this coupling?
Well, again, the idea here was to assume that the temperature of the two sectors are the same. So this coupling is always chosen in such a way that it's big enough so that the temperatures are the same.
Mm-hmm.
So that phi has the same temperature as the standard model.
Without affecting chi annihilation.
Without affecting chi annihilation, exactly. This coupling can be very small, be 10 to the minus. I'll show you the numbers. It can be very small. For instance, one thing you can do is to couple phi to electrons. Like this, you can think how this coupling comes about, and be a Higgs mix. It really doesn't matter. You have this coupling. Typically, here it's numbers. For instance, this coupling clearly, even though the two-body decay is forbidden because I forbidden it by kinematics. Psi can clearly decay. I mean, if m psi minus m chi is above e plus e minus threshold, this decay can happen for sure. But typically, it's very slow. And for the parameter space which are relevant in the model, you see, you can have an idea of what this coupling, coupling here is. So this coupling is such, it can be small enough so not to affect the relic abundance, but to keep thermal equilibrium. Now, in the relevant range of parameters, this is all very dependent on masses and blah, 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 but typically what comes out is that the lifetime of psi is quite long, can be of order years. Now, this leads to some kind of experimental signatures. For instance, one thing that can happen is that if the lifetime, so when psi decays, can have a very long lifetime, and it can decay to to particles which have electromagnetic charge, and so which can then dump electromagnetic energy in the CMB or in the universe. Now, one thing that happens in standard cosmology is that times T of order a few months, what happens is that double Compton scattering is no longer efficient in the CMB. And double Compton scattering is what keeps the chemical potential for photons to be zero. So after double Compton scattering freezes out, the chemical potential of the CMB is fixed, standard Compton. Okay? So if I inject energy above this time t equals 0.2 years, what is going to happen is that I'm going to distort the CMB power spectrum. In particular, we'll generate two kinds of distortion, depending exactly at what time I'm injecting energy, called mu type or y type. Okay, it doesn't really matter, but the idea is that I can measure these things. This deviation were already measured by Kobe and Firas, including a bound of order 10 to the minus 4. Now, an experiment PXE is expected to improve that. Now, by order of magnitude, by 4 order of magnitude, what is clear is whether PXE will happen at this point, because it wasn't on the NASA list of funded experiments this year, so we don't know exactly what. So it's not clear whether it will happen soon, but there is a proposal which is PXE to measure, which will be able to measure very high accuracy the CMB power spectrum and its features, and put a bound of order 10 to the minus 8 on the power spectrum, and one of the constraints on this kind of model come exactly from CMB distortion. There are other constraints. Clearly, at low masses, there are an effective constraint. There are bounds from supernova. And the thing is, it's hard. Given the coupling being so small, this model is by construction safe from basically indirect detection bounds and direct detection bounds. It's an interesting question to realize the same mechanism in more alternative scenarios. Okay. But yes, the constraint, at least on this specific implementation, where the coupling to the standard model is through coupling to electrons. Okay. One reason to talk about this is that if it's not clear enough yet, it's good always to stress that there are no such things in direct detection experiments as thermal targets. Okay, you can have a dark matter of thermal origin which has no direct detection signature whatsoever. So, saying that this experiment will exclude thermal dark matter model without any qualification is not correct. There is a vast variety of models which are thermal and which have very different experimental signatures, and sometimes these signatures are not in direct detection experiments. Again, this does not exclude having signature in direct detection experiment. This is what I'm thinking about right now. So another thing that co-scattering should be interesting to think about is whether this non-thermal effect can allow to evade the KV scale bound on thermal dark matter, coming from the fact that if dark matter is thermal and it's of a mass of order KV scale, it's going to be relativistic at freeze out, so it's going to destroy the prediction of all dark matter. Other implementation of the same mechanism are interesting to pursue. Thank you. So delta is what I was calling delta. Yeah, it's like m psi minus m chi divided by m chi. So it's the relative mass splitting between the two fermionic states.
Okay. So
in this plane, okay, in this plane, so you fix the parameters and then you choose. And then you choose delta in order to match the right relic bundles. So in principle, here you plot delta 1%. So it grows in this direction.
Okay.
Delta is going to be 10%, 20%.
How would you make the connection? I mean, in reality, what you measure here is phi decaying to plus or minus.
Yeah.
How would you make the connection that this is the portal to the dark sector?
Yeah. There is no straightforward way to see. You know. Yeah, there is no straightforward way. But this, you know, is generic of WIMPs and so let's say you see, okay, let's say you see this model in particular doesn't have direct detection signatures, but I can think about a model in which you still have this spectral distortion effects, and you have a measurable direct detection cross-section on electron at, for instance, sensei in the long run. So maybe now you have two handles. Maybe now you see one and the other. Now, clearly, you know, in this model, you can predict mu. It has, because you know, you have this formula. No, and tau, no, this is fixed. Tau is given now by your model. So, you know, if you measure a given mu, you have some constraint on what the parameters are. Maybe you measure some other, you know, from sensei, let's say a scattering cross section. You constrain, you project down to a smaller subspace. Again, it's trivial. But I hope this happens. And we have that problem of deciding what's the right dark matter.
What was tau psi again?
Tau psi is the lifetime of the heavier fermionic state. The lifetime of psi.